Welcome to the Apria podcast, investing in Asian real assets. The theme of the series is Resurgence of REITs in the Asia Pacific, featuring REITs CEOs highlighting market opportunities, strategies, and their professional journey. This series is proudly brought to you by Link Asset Management Limited. In this episode, journalist Mark Cooper speaks with Darren Steinberg, who is the CEO of Dexus. Darren has over 30 years' experience in the property and funds management industry, with an extensive background in office, industrial and retail property investment and development. In this episode, Darren shares how his leadership style evolved and what he has learned along the way. As Dexus is one of the most highly rated companies globally for ESG, Darren talks about what you need to do to get you to the top spot. He also talks about how the pandemic will change Australian real estate in the long term.
Welcome to the Apria podcast interview with me, Mark Cooper. And today I'm very happy to have Darren Steinberg, who's the CEO of Dexus, an Australian REIT with 32 billion Australian dollars of assets under management. So one of the big players in the region. Welcome, Darren.
Good morning, Mark. And good to meet you.
So we're going to kick off talking a little bit about you and your career. So you've been in real estate for more than 30 years and in senior leadership roles for the past 20. So tell us a bit about how your leadership style has evolved over that time, what you've learned to do, and maybe a bit about what you've learned not to do as well.
Yeah, certainly. My style has certainly evolved over the last sort of 20 to 30 years. And today, I suppose I'm more of a situational leader. And that is, I can adapt my style depending on what's happening around me and what stage the business is in. So, you know, I adapt a range of different styles. So they could be transformational, transactional, or coaching. And it really depends on at what stage the industry's in and at what stage the market's in and depends on which organisation I'm in at the time. And I've been very fortunate to be in a variety of different organisations over the last 20 to 30 years. And I suppose each time you go through a market cycle or move organisations, you get to adapt and change your style as well.
Tell us a bit about, are there things that you've kind of, maybe you did 10 years ago that you don't do now, that you think that maybe don't work in a different market environment or with say, a different generation of staff?
Yeah, look, I think there's been some pretty key learnings over the last 20 years. And I think there's sort of three things that sort of stick in my mind. And I suppose the first one is, you know, you learn to be a lot more patient. I don't know whether that's an age thing or not. Slow down a bit, just be a bit more thoughtful in how you go about things. So, and not be in such a hurry. You know, nothing is sort of that critical. You've got to just move, you know, at the speed of lightning, particularly in the real estate space. So that's been a key learning. I think also early on in your career as a chief executive, you try to take safe bets and particularly with people, I'd say. I suppose one of the best learnings for me over the past sort of decade is you want to make sure you can get people on your team that are going to have good, vigorous debates with you. But also, it's also spread your learnings about who you employ. Like, and by safe bets, I mean, it's easy for me if I've known, I think we call it unconscious bias. So if I've known Mark Cooper for a long time and I've seen Mark, I've had drinks with him in the pub, I know him well, it's very safe when the role comes up that Mark fits just to go straight to Mark and say, look, there's a process, but you're going to get the job, Mark, because it's a safe bet. I think one of the key learnings that I've sort of made now is to sort of disrupt that unconscious bias and open it up. And there's a couple of key circumstances or employees that I've put on over the last, you know, let's say 5 years where I've opened up that spectrum, you know, got past that unconscious bias, and that's been really beneficial to Dexus and to the way we operate and bringing in new learnings and not just the same sort of style and same way because Mark's the safe bet. And boards get nervous when you do that as a chief executive, particularly for direct reports. Yeah, that's a key learning. You've got to back your judgment. But without those sort of kind of new employees, you're not going to change the way the business is done and the business isn't really going to evolve. And I think the final point I'd make, and one that's really big positive for me over my career, is just to get the right people around you. You need people with different experiences. You need the people I have around me will be different to someone else that's maybe got a more financial background or a more marketing background. So I make sure that my leadership teams are like, I treat them like sports teams, quite frankly. I have flexible people that can move, play multiple positions, but I also bring in a lot of people that have different core strengths to mine, and together, hopefully more often than not, we make the right decisions.
Great. Talking a bit about Dexus, one of the things that you're most highly rated for is ESG. And I saw that you've got kind of top spot for real estate in the Dow Jones Sustainability Indices, and also very highly rated by the GRESB research. Can you tell us, now obviously there's all sorts of advice about how to make real estate and real estate companies more sustainable, but what do you think is it that gets you to the very top of those ratings?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of points. First of all, I suppose for us, ESG is just embedded, it's just part of the way we do business, and it's really easy for a operating real estate companies such as us, particularly with the large funds management business that we have, is that it makes sense to run the buildings as efficiently and effectively as we can. And a lot of that comes down to the sustainability perspective. But of course, ESG is a lot more than just sustainability, although a lot of people go straight to, you know, run the buildings more efficiently. So it's the way you treat your customer base. It's about modern slavery. You know, there's a very broad spectrum that ESG partakes. And I think one of the key sort of points for Dexus and why we're so heavily invested in this is it's expected today by your investment community. It's expected by your staff. But, you know, for the first time in many, many years, and I'd say, you know, 20 years ago, the customers really didn't care about it. But today, you know, it's top of mind for customers as well. So that's why Dexus spends so much time. That's why it's core to how we operate. And it, as I said, it can focus on the way leases are structured. It can focus on the way we operate our buildings. It focuses on the kind of charities that we support. And it focuses on many of the policies we have in just operating our business on a daily basis. And all this is about making our business as sustainable as it can through the cycles.
Now, you've been buying back a lot of securities this year. I'd just be interested to learn a little bit about the strategy and if you feel the market's not been valuing you correctly.
Well, that's probably been the easiest acquisitions we've made in the past 12 months is, you know, Dexus, for those of you that don't know, is a property company, although we are quite heavy into the office sector. So we have sort of a core balance sheet investments, which is the real estate that we hold on balance sheet, and that consists predominantly of office and industrial. It's about 85% office, you know, 15 to 20% industrial. We have a funds management business that today, well, after the recent AMP transaction, has $21 billion of funds under management on that platform. And if it was a standalone business, would be, you know, trading very, very strongly. And, you know, it's grown in the past 3 months from $15 billion under management to $21 billion with a variety of initiatives. And we have a trading business where we, you know, reposition, redeploy and develop assets to make profit as if you and I were a smaller company. So there's three components of our business. When you look at NTA, which is sort of one measure, the NTA only reflects the assets that are on the balance sheet, the core assets. And so earlier on this year, when Dexus was trading in the $8 to $9 range, that was well and truly not even reflecting the value of our real estate assets that we have on the balance sheet, let alone the other two elements of our business. So it's a very easy trade for us to be allocating money to buy back our stock at those levels. And, you know, we were buying in the sort of $8 to $9 range, and today we're trading around $10.30. So that's been a very good investment for Dexus unit holders.
And do you, I mean, is there a, I suppose it's hard to say, to kind of a re-education process to try and get that the valuation up? Because, I mean, I guess to a certain extent it's because the market values very straightforward businesses better because they're easier to understand. So what do you do to make yourselves easier to understand?
Well, I suppose, yeah, you can look internally and say maybe we should market better. But I mean, it's, you have a very, there's very full disclosure down here in the Australian market. So you can very clearly see the value of our properties. And I suppose, you know, investors have a very sort of busy universe to invest in. So maybe we need to be clearer. And I think you're seeing that now in our latest presentations. You know, if our $21 billion funds management business was a standalone entity, you know, there are the multiples those style of businesses are trading on in the Australian market are significantly above where Dexus was trading, you know, 6 months ago and even where it's trading today. So there's various strategic options available to us as we move forward if the market doesn't, you know, add value onto those businesses within this structure.
Let's talk a bit about the market generally. It's funny, I seem to be asking questions about the pandemic and what will happen as it's over for about the past 18 months now. It's obviously not that quite that long, but that's how long it seems. So tell us a bit about how it's affected your business, both in terms of the real estate and in terms of the operation, and also what you think might happen in the longer term.
Yeah, so look, firstly, I think it's really, Australia is in a super fortunate position compared to many countries around the globe. The hard, fast lockdowns, the border, the fact we're an island, have been very beneficial to this country for the most part. And so we're having a different COVID experience down here as to many companies around the globe. And, I spend many evenings on Zoom calls like this around the globe with people in the US and Europe, UK, and they've been very unfortunate, and many of them have been home for a long time. So their, their perception and their the way they are living through the pandemic will colour their thoughts when it comes to investment. When I come back to Australia, then we're very fortunate, as I said, in Sydney, that life is more or less back to normal. People are back living a normal existence for the most part. Yes, they can't travel as easily, and definitely can't travel internationally. But, they can come to work, they can go to the bars, they can go to restaurants, and life's getting back to normal. So how has that affected our business? Well, I think, first of all, if you think about our office business, people were slow to come back to work, particularly those companies that were global companies and had global policies. So that's slowly dissipating. And today, in Sydney, for example, which is our largest market, office market, we have about 60% occupancy back in our office. In the core part of the Sydney CBD, it's probably a bit higher. And then Dexus, we're operating at sort of 85 to 90, which is where we were pre-COVID. So overall, I think the key message is flexible work is here to stay. So I think that's one of the key changes. And historically, Australia is one of the sort of laggards when these sort of global changes happen. This time we're at the forefront of it. So undoubtedly, people will work more flexibly going forward. So what does that mean to office occupancy, which is one of the big questions? I think what we are clearly seeing is companies that were being successful and doing well are getting on with business and signing long-term leases. And we signed around 108 deals, I think it was, in the last quarter, at a variety of sizes. And big companies, small companies, that are taking 5 to 10 year leases. Companies that weren't doing well are saying, look, we're going to cut back space. And that means that for the most part, they're going to cut back headcount. What I believe we're seeing is just a normal business cycle exacerbated by COVID. So as a result of that, you did see lower demand, particularly last year when no one could really get into the office. You've seen incentives elevate. They're starting to moderate now. And so I believe what you'll see is a normal business cycle play out. People will operate their offices more flexibly going forward. They'll look at reworking their office space. Those that are renewing are reworking them to be a more COVID-friendly, shall we say, environment. They're seeing more collaboration space. They'll have staff operating more flexibly, which means that they won't always need 100% capacity in the office. And many organisations were doing this pre-COVID anyway. So, flexible working was a trend that was coming into the market. It's been accelerated by COVID, as many other trends have been accelerated. And so companies are already used to fitting out for only having 60, 70, 80% of their workplace in the office at any one point in time. What organisations are still dealing with is, how do you tell Mark not to come to work today because there's no office space? And that's still being dealt through. And I think even in our work with some big tech customers that are, coming back to the office and wanting these collaborative spaces built, they're still not sure about how they're going to operate long term. So they're building great offices and they're taking global office space globally, but they are still not sure how they're going to tell Mark what days he's going to come to work and what days he's not going to come to work. Office spaces will change and probably be higher. The densities were getting very tight, so they'll probably grow a little bit. There'll be more meters per square per person, which will see space grow a little bit. And there'll be different ways of fitting out. There'll be far more collaborative spaces in fit outs and far more meeting rooms and quiet places within fit outs, which will probably lead to more space as well. So,
but nothing but suggests a sort of more evolution and the natural effect of the cycle than a revolution in how people occupy.
I think the key message for everyone is flexibility is here to stay. And if you're not operating your business flexibly, you are going to get left behind because the talent won't want to work at your organisation. But the other key message is successful, and what we are clearly seeing is that the successful organisations are those that are operating more flexibly but still getting people in the office to work on collaboration, to work on innovation, and to maintain a really strong culture.
How involved does Dexus get with attendance in that kind of work? I've seen you've got a workplace consulting team. How involved are you with, you know, advising them on the type of space and the fit out and those type of things?
It's really like we have an organisation within our business that does that. Obviously, we get a lot of exposure to a whole lot of different organisations. And so, yeah, we work, yeah, at the moment, we probably work with 15 to 20 different organisations and consult to a few others about their workplace consulting and how they're going to work into the future. And it's one of the big sort of question marks that's going to play out globally over the coming sort of 2, 3, 4 years, how people evolve their work style, you know, to reflect the new way of working post-COVID.
And what are your thoughts about, I often read reports, some of them slightly apocalyptic, about what will happen to CBDs in the long-term future, and about how the pandemic might change how and where people want to live. Yeah. And I was just wondering whether you have any kind of sympathy to those views and how you think it might play out in Australia in particular.
Yeah, look, it's really interesting when you go back over history and you see these various events happen and then everyone's like, oh, the end of the world is nigh and, you know, it's going to change forever. I think what we are clearly seeing in Sydney, and it's being evidenced by the deal flow, is that globalisation trend that has been around for the last sort of 30, 40 years is still well and truly underway and will continue post the pandemic. You know, once again, having a different experience here to other places in the world, but I can see the key talent still wants to be in the CBDs. The transport systems are set up around CBDs. And the most pleasing element to me is that, you know, organisations are recommitting to leases in the CBDs and signing long-term commitments. And, you know, even as recently as the last sort of month, we had 3 or 4 organisations were in suburban sort of hubs relocate in because the talent still wants to be here. That's where the majority of the restaurants are. It's where the young people want to be. It's where the bars are, the transport links, the entertainment is set up here. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that the CBDs will remain core to, you know, workplaces, and they've evolved over many hundreds of years, and I do not see that breaking down as a result of COVID. You know, the evidence will be there, but, you know, we're backing ourselves with our capital. We are investing in CBDs. People are signing leases in CBDs, so I believe they will come back, you know, bigger and stronger than ever. And I'll sort of point people back to 9/11, when that very unfortunate event occurred, and people said that's the end of the high-rise office tower, and that's the end of New York. And, you know, 6 to 12 months later, things are back to normal. And a year or two later, it was bigger and, you know, bigger and better than it ever had been before. So I think you will see on the back of all this global stimulus and what is happening, that we're in quite an exciting environment for business, and you're seeing a lot of sort of business deals taking place. And I think you'll see within the next 2 to 3 years, CBDs coming back bigger and better than before, albeit with some tweaks. And, you know, here in Sydney, for example, there's more alfresco spaces, more bike paths being done, and that make it easier and friendlier to get in and out. So, plus we're very lucky to have a number of key transport links finishing over the next couple of years, which is going to make it really easy to get in and out of the city as well.
Yeah, you were mentioned about measures to kind of help offices deal with things like COVID, and that sort of ties in also slightly with ESG, with healthy buildings and healthy workplaces. Do you have initiatives in that regard? Are you seeing more demand from your tenants for things to make their workplaces healthier?
Yeah, look, we've been sort of once again at the forefront to be able to get people back into work. Last year, we were a bit at the forefront of this, and we're also an investor in a group called Taronga Ventures that, you know, is at the forefront of some of the technology, and there's some really exciting, you know, not expensive technology that's available today that you can not only put in new buildings, but also retrofit old buildings with regard to clean air and ensuring, to the best of your ability, a very safe workplace. So what you'll see over the coming years is a lot more in this sort of clean air. And I'm thinking here about, you know, filtration systems that they use in nuclear submarines, for example, to you know, clean the air in the offices. You know, there's a touchless entries into lifts, into toilets. There's a variety of new technologies that are coming out. And I think, you know, the easy part is building the new buildings, and we've got some of the key development sites here in Australia and the key CBDs in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane that are underway, developments that are in pre-planning with pre-commitments lining up for them. But I think the bigger issue for the industry is retrofitting the old buildings, and we're spending a lot of time on that. And you know, one thing that springs to mind is a small unit. I think it costs, you know, under $1,000 that you can put in lifts that effectively purifies the air inside that lift space. And it's technologies like that that groups like ours, with the scale and mass that we can, A, get close to the technology, and then B, roll it out quite quickly through our portfolios.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess with things like that, they will also, as you say, retrofitting is important. It will work. That's doable in small.
It's amazing when you talk to all the tech developers and how keen they are on the new stuff. And you say, well, that's fantastic, but there's only so many new buildings being developed every year or 2 years. The money is actually to be made in retrofitting the old buildings. And that's something we do very well here at Dexus. But that's where I encourage these tech guys to play, because unlocking the ability to retrofit old buildings is nirvana for the long-term owners of assets such as ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot more old buildings than there are new ones.
Correct.
Okay, to finish off, we started talking about your career and leadership. Maybe finish off with getting some advice for the people at the start of their careers. Maybe start by, can you say what was your first job in real estate, and how did that work out?
Yeah, look, I started off as an assistant property manager at a big office tower in Perth. And within about, I think it was 6 months, the gentleman I was working for unfortunately had a heart attack, but he had to take about 7 months off. So 6 months after taking that job, I was running a team of sort of 14 people, ranging from sort of Vietnam vets on the maintenance side, car parking, dealing with institutional owners. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire, but one that put me in great stead for the rest of my career, having to run sort of these sort of people at various ages from, you know, at the time, quite a young age. I was very lucky to have a strong background in competitive sport and coaching, so that helped me a lot. But, you know, just to remind people what was going, one of my first jobs there was to put the variable outgoing schedule into a computer package called Lotus Notes, and I still am today a one-finger typist, so you can imagine that was not a pleasant experience. But I think the one key learning back then is, you know, don't be afraid of, you know, pushing yourselves. And when you get thrown a challenge like that, take it on, you know, with a full head of steam, and don't be afraid to put your hand up and ask questions when you get caught out. And you can imagine that was quite a baptism of fire at the time.
So you would advise me for kind of people starting out to try and find some fire to put themselves in.
Well, you always, you know, what is it, sink or swim? And hopefully you can swim.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, some people perhaps, I mean, you had a certain amount of luck, obviously. It could have easily gone in different ways, but for somebody who feels they're maybe not getting anywhere, or worried they might not get anywhere in a current role, what would your advice be in terms of either doing more in that role, or whether just to kind of get out if you think it's not working?
Yeah, look, as a younger person, I tell this to my team all the time. It's one of our duties as leaders of organisations, if we see talent, first of all, to spot that talent, and to secondly, give them the challenges that they need to evolve their career. And, you know, we're very fortunate at Dexus. We've been growing strongly, and we've got a variety of things going on here, that our job as leaders and the GMC, the management committee, is to spot the talent early and bring them through the organisation. And I think of Melanie Burke, who's our Chief Operating Officer. She was in finance for about 10 to 12 years when I got here 9 years ago. We very quickly saw how smart she was. She's had 5 or 6 different roles through the organisation as now our Chief Operating Officer. So great talent, very smart, but she wasn't being given the opportunity. If we hadn't given her the opportunity and we moved her, she went to Office of the CEO, she went to Industrial Relations, she ran an office portfolio, now she's doing what she's doing. If we hadn't given her that opportunity, she would have, in my view, had to go. And so there are, I'm sure, in everyone's organisations, many people have great skills, but part of the key talent of being a leader is to find that talent and to help it grow. And if you can't provide the opportunities for that talent, then I'd say you need to go. But this isn't, you know, and I think one of the things with young people today, it's not a 6-month exercise. Like, you need to go learn, get that under your belt when you're comfortable. And this is a key message for everyone. When you can't learn anymore in the role you're in, it's time to go and do something else.
Excellent. That's great. Good advice. Thank you very much indeed, Darren. It's been great to speak to you.
No worries. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to the Resurgence of REITs in Asia Pacific podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and we'll be back soon with more episodes featuring industry leaders and deal makers who specialize in REITs. If you like what you've heard and would like to give us feedback on future episodes, please do drop us a note on info@apria.asia. For more content and information, visit www.apria.asia or follow us on LinkedIn.